dead, non-deceased, or despised, whatever living beings they may be, or meeting nuns. That's why they don't get much support.
We have some brand new people who've never meditated today.
Brand new people, never meditated before. Excellent. That must mean we get a big turnover.
Every week,
yeah. They don't keep coming here. Okay, we still get a few old ones. We've been coming here for year after year after year. I always say, if I was a school teacher, and you kept coming back to the same class, year after year after year, I would get the sack. My purpose in life as a teacher is to get rid of you. So that you graduate, you know everything more than I know, and then you can do it yourself. But until that time, and for those who are just starting out, meditation is just so easy, learning how to relax and learning how to be still, to learn how to stop and just be. Isn't that nice? Just even just talking like that, people say, oh, they get an idea of what meditation is. So in a few moments we're going to sit down, we're going to close our eyes. The reason is because there's so many things to look at and disturb you. And so when you don't look at other people, it means that you're more quiet, you're not so distracted, and your poor brain, which uses most of its gigabytes, well, if you call it like that, most of its capacity to process visual stuff, but now you don't have to see anything, which means you've got more part of your brain to actually feel. And one of the other reasons why we close our eyes when we're meditating, because that allows anybody, if you need to pick your nose or put your finger in your ear, you can do that because no one is watching. So all these little things we have to do to be in polite society, when no one is watching, you can do whatever you want, and it's much easier to be more comfortable, because that's what a finger's for. I always wonder what the little finger was for. It's just the right size, isn't it? It's evolution. So what does that old say? Why do gorillas have big noses? Because they've got big fingers. It's true. Have a look. Next time you go to the zoo. So when your eyes are closed, you can do whatever you want. It's nice and easy. But it's also more than that, because you can feel more. You get more sensitive. One thing is cut off, and more attention can go into feeling. So we start this meditation because you can't relax and be peaceful if your body is always irritating you. An ache here, a pain there. And as you get old, I was just teaching at the Cancer Wellness Association in Cottesloe, my once a year talk over there. And I was telling people, they wondered how old I was. And I told people, with all honesty, I am now 785. Absolutely true. Isn't that true, Rachel?
Yes.
785 months old. I like counting my age in months because it makes me feel more venerable. For a month, the holy life only starts at 70. So I'm still young. You're not really a holy man until you're 70 or 80 or something. Then you're really holy and venerable. But actually, that's... people say I'm holy because that's why they gave me my nickname. You know my nickname? Ajahn Donut. Why they call me Donut? Because I'm round, sweet, and holy in the middle. That's Donut. That's my name. Sweet and holy. Your body is always causing you problems, so we learn how to actually relax the body. And just doing that much, just about everyone I taught when I was at Cottesloe, for people who had cancer, might get cancer, or dealt with people with cancer, learning how to relax the body. I mean, really relax it. I mean, deeply relax the body. It's amazing how much health comes when you're really relaxed. Even many people don't know how to sleep at night. And they can't. So I told people that God has said, look, if you can't sleep at night, when you go to bed, meditate. Because so many people, when I teach them meditation, fall asleep. And if you want to stay awake while you're meditating, when you're sitting here, try to go to sleep. And then you'll be awake. Many people tell me that. They go on these retreats, 9-day retreats, weekend retreats, and they say, oh, every time they go meditate in the hall, they always fall asleep. And every time they go to bed, they can't go to sleep. It's obvious what's happening there. When they're in the hall, they're trying to meditate, so stop trying to meditate. When you're in the hall, try to fall asleep. And then you stay awake. When you're in bed, try to stay awake, and then you fall asleep. Reverse psychology. Often works. Give it a try. That's good, because next week I won't be here, otherwise you'll be fine. Other than that, a lot of times people listen to my talks, send them to sleep. That's the other way. Go and get some talk by the Prime Minister, that'll send you to sleep. Or Donald Trump. Okay, did I tell the Donald Trump joke?
No.
About the assassination attempt?
No.
There's an assassination attempt against Donald Trump, the Prime Minister. In a big meeting, somebody stood up and took a gun out and pointed it at the President. And one of his security guard shouted out, Donald, duck! And at that, the assassin burst out laughing and couldn't pull the trigger, and they arrested him. Save this one. You only get more of that if you hang around me. So anyway, but then you're relaxing your body, really relax it, and actually laughter helps. It takes away a lot of tension when you laugh. That's why I do laugh on purpose. Sometimes not on purpose, I just for fun. For no reason whatsoever. So anyway, that you relax the body. So how you relax the body is we use this combination of mindfulness and letting be, or otherwise known as kindness. But kindness, I was, again, just this afternoon, telling people, for goodness sake, don't go around visiting your friends in hospital and say, oh, I hope you get well. That's a terrible thing to say to somebody. That's putting the pressure on them to get well. No, you should say, may you get well if you want to, but if you get sick, that's also acceptable. I will still be your friend, whatever happens. Instead of putting, you know, the pressure on people to get better. Like people that say, have a wonderful trip, Ajahn Brahm. I said, no. It's my decision why I have a wonderful trip. Or not. I'm not going to follow what you say. Who are you to tell me to have a wonderful trip? It's my decision. Butt out. So it sounds like kindness. So what really is kindness is just my body, may you be just as you are. If you want to be in pain, fine. If you want to hurt, fine. If you want to be healthy, fine. Body, I love you for what you are, without putting on any pressure or stress on your body. Because sometimes that's a cause of stress. Trying to get better. Trying to be different. Instead of just allowing yourself to be precisely as you are. Who told you you aren't good enough? Who told you you have to improve? What is wrong with me? Nothing. Absolutely nothing. So just be and relax. That's kindness. So you look at your body, you're sitting here, and you don't try and just make your body different. Just see how comfortable it can get. Sitting down, crossing your legs like I'm doing, or with your feet on the floor. If you've got long legs, you need to put the cushion underneath your feet. If you've got long legs, you put your cushion underneath your bum. If you've got a very thin bum, you put many cushions there. If you've already got upholstery, then you don't need that much. I've got my own upholstery, that's why I'm like this, so I can go anywhere and meditate and don't need a cushion. But then you try and just be aware of your body. And I'll be going through this, giving you a guided meditation. Be aware of just how you're sitting. Are you comfortable? It's amazing that people are just so busy doing other stuff they don't even realise how they're sitting, whether they're comfortable or not, or even just how they're holding their hands, or how they're holding their legs. You know, the people who do dancing, professional dancing, they have to be so aware of every muscle in their body, so they can actually move it just right. For most of us, we don't even bother about that. So, watch the way people walk. No wonder sometimes they get sort of stiff legs or bad knees, because they're not aware of how they're holding their body. So, we start off with this meditation. I will guide you a quick sweep through the body to relax the body. And then, it's not that relaxed yet. So next we do this other little exercise of focusing, once the body is just generally relaxed, focusing on one part of your body, the one which is the most irritating. You may have irritable bowel syndrome, a headache, you may have an earache, or so many other aches you can have. So, husband ache, yeah, we can't do much about that here, but never mind. No, it's not a husband ache, it is in the past ache. Because your husband ain't here now. So he just lives in the past, wherever he is, fine, he can do whatever he wants. So, we do the body. To see what we can do to really relax the body. Focusing on one part of it, and then just giving it a lot of kindness. Because kindness is something which relaxes us. If I come in here and you're afraid of me, and if I'm a control freak, and if I shout at you, then that makes you tense. If I come in here and speak nice and softly, say a few nice jokes, relax people, you can see that people just, they soften, they relax. So a little bit of kindness, not force, actually relaxes your body a huge amount. So you look at something which you may have heart problems, you might have lung problems, whatever it is you have, just feel it as best you can, and just relax it to the max. Just like if I have stress on my robe, if I keep pulling it, it's going to wear out and it's going to break after a while. I can't stand it very long. When it's nice and loose, then there's no tension in it, it will last a long, long time. That's why these robes, they last for years and years, because they're always nice and loose. I've seen people these days, they wear these jeans, and they only wear them a day or two, they're already frayed and got holes in them. But I know this. I gave a talk to some executives a long time ago. One of these execs for some sort of club, I think it was over in Dalkeith somewhere or somewhere, some rich place anyway. Really rich people, executives. And they said, I can tell the difference between you and just how I was brought up, because she went to one of these Catholic schools. She said, all the Catholic nuns were just so tight. You know, all their clothes were just so tight. She said, you Buddhist monks, you're just so loose. Always things falling off. He said, that's the difference for you. There's no tension at all, no tightness. I thought that was actually quite a good sort of observation. Just, you know, learn how to be loose. So, when you're loose in your body, sometimes so you can imagine you've got like a tension, maybe in your stomach somewhere, or in this region. You can imagine it like a rope being pulled tight. That's stress. So, to loosen the stress of a rope, what do? Let go of both ends. Can you imagine that? Can you imagine your muscles or tendons or something being stretched? That's what it feels like. And you can imagine like these two invisible beings on either end pulling at it. And you imagine it's letting go. And the whole thing being loose. There's nothing pulling at you. Or sometimes it feels like you're squashed up like a sponge, all squashed and tight. And how do you relax that? You just loosen the pressure, not forcing anything, not squashing anything. You're letting things be natural, and the sponge, I imagine it expanding, becoming all light and fluffy again. When your body is all light and fluffy all the way through, it's really healthy. So You imagine this with little parts of your body, and so everything gets so light and fluffy that you look through your body, there's no tightness or tension anywhere in your body. Really relaxed. Just that much of meditation feels great. Many people pay thousands of dollars to go to Bali on holiday. What do they do there? Sitting on the beach, relaxing. Or if they're more wealthy, they go to these exotic locations. The same idea, sitting on a beach, relaxing. You don't need to spend all that money. You can relax just as deeply here in Armidale on a Tuesday night, sitting here feeling as relaxed as on your exotic resort, which is one of the reasons why we nickname this group, what do we call it?
Club Med.
Club Med Armidale, yes. Club Meditation Armidale. You know, I invented that joke a long time ago, and I saw it, somebody said it in a newspaper. There's just no recognition at all. I should patent all these things. Anyway, but if you patent it, you get royalties, but also you get sued. And I think I get sued more times than I get royalties for my jokes. Sued for abuse. You know what happened in the Catholic Church? In the Buddhist Church, we get sued for bad jokes. Probably. Anyway, I better not go there. It's all grimacing. Anyway, back to relaxing the body. So your body gets very, very relaxed. The next step, going over it very quickly, once your body's really relaxed and you're enjoying it, it feels good. When you let go and things get relaxed, everything gets nice. The next thing we do is we relax the mind. Exactly the same process, but instead of, you know, what are we actually watching? Watching the muscles, or what are we watching? We're watching what I call the peaceometer. In your car, there's a speedometer. And that speedometer tells you how fast you're going. You go too fast, you're in trouble, you get pinged by the police. Too slow, you get pinged by all the other drivers for going too slow, causing a problem. So that gives you, when you watch the speedometer, it gives you some feedback. So if you press too hard on the accelerator, you see it going up, that's too much. You press too lightly on the accelerator, it's too low. So actually you use your vision, your mindfulness of the speedometer, to regulate how hard you should press on the pedal. So just get on the perfect speed. Now, the peaceometer, there's something inside of you which will tell you how peaceful or how agitated you are. You know, if you're really rushing around, very upset, very disappointed, very angry, oh, your mind is really agitated. It's a long way from peace. The needle is way to one side. But there are some times you're relaxed, nothing to do, just sitting here, nothing to think about. And your needle goes way down to peacefulness. So you know how peaceful or how agitated you are. Now it's important that you become aware of that. Just like you're aware of how tense the body is or how relaxed it is, it doesn't take much to notice and learn to be mindful of your peaceometer, how peaceful you are, or how stressed you are. Again, it is like a guitar string. If that guitar string is stretched and taut, when something hits it, it makes the sound. But when that guitar string is really loose, no tension on it at all, nothing pulling and pushing it, something hits it, it makes no sound. When your mind is really peaceful, relaxed, nothing pulling at it or pushing at it, no trying to do things or get things, no pressure on you at all. No shoulds, no oughts. So relaxed that when anything hits it, like somebody coughs or a door slams, you don't have any thoughts. Thoughts are like the ping when something hits the guitar string. When your mind is really relaxed, it doesn't think at all. It's just peaceful, being there. So that's really important, to notice the peaceometer and make your mind really as peaceful as you possibly can. You know why? Because peace is more important than thinking. Who wants to think when you can have some silence in the mind? Isn't that nice? Peace. So after a while, when you really relax, the peace stays. So, but we also do a little bit extra, because sometimes, unless people really understand what peace is and know that peaceometer and how to move it, then a lot of times people go along and start thinking about all the important things which are bothering you in your life, which aren't really that important. You can let them go for 20 minutes. Your husband is not that important. You can drop him. Let him go. Bye-bye, husband, for half an hour. Bye-bye, wife, half an hour. Bye-bye, work. How are you getting paid for doing work this evening? So why do you think about it? This is your free time, holiday time, so why not enjoy it? So, in order to help you focus, we start to become aware of our breathing, just breathing in, breathing out, just like watching the waves on the beach at Bali, sitting there. The waves come in and the waves go out. Peaceful, beautiful, without a care in the world. No worries at all. Just being peaceful. Oh, what joy in Club Med Armadale. So cheap. You don't need to have any tickets, no customs or immigration. Just rock up here and you go to Club Med for half an hour. So that's actually what happens. So, I will be leading the meditation, so you have nothing to worry about at all. And for half an hour, 25 minutes, what do you reckon, Rachel?
Half an hour.
Yeah, half an hour, let's go for it. It's okay, we can always go on a bit 10 minutes afterwards. I usually do go on 10 minutes afterwards anyway. So you can usually get your money's worth in the end. Okay, so I'm going to go to where I belong, on the floor, I know my place. I just like sitting on the floor. There you go. And here we go. I have to see this. I've got a little gong here, so ring the gong when it's time to finish. So you've got nothing to worry about whatsoever. So, close your eyes. So please, everyone, close your eyes. Once your eyes are closed, again, if you need to pick your nose, please feel free. Well, no one's watching. It's a natural thing. I don't know why we have all these rules and regulations about what we can do in public, what we can't do. And then, your eyes closed, ask your legs if they're comfortable. One way of arousing, starting mindfulness, is to ask a question. Sometimes I ask my body, legs, how are you down there? As soon as I ask a question and I pause and listen, I get an answer. My legs say, they're not bad, but I can make them better. Better. And I'm not afraid to move my legs to find the best posture. That's kindness. Just like tucking a kid in bed at night time, your kid. You comfortable? Do you want an extra blanket? Just the care relaxes the legs. And then I ask my bottom, butt, how are you? Do you want to have another cushion underneath? I'll just adjust it so you're really comfortable on the chair. You sure you're comfortable on the chair? Do If you need to move, please move. And then next, your back. Sometimes people hold their back so tight, no wonder it gets aches and pains. Sometimes a bit too slack. So you find the best way for your back. You can lean back against the chair if you wish. You can straighten the back if you wish. Whatever works for you. And then check your arms and hands. Are they comfortable? You may notice that many people fidget with their hands during meditation. The reason is because they never really paid attention and kindness to get their hands in a comfortable position to begin with. So be kind and caring to these hands which you exploit so much. Make sure they're comfy. And then your shoulders. People are so tight with their shoulders. Just be aware of your shoulders and see if you can loosen them, relax them. With the mindfulness, the awareness on our body, it does take a bit of trial and error before we learn how to relax things. But first of all, we have to be aware of things. And we really notice how our body feels. Once we know how it feels, then relaxation is usually the next thing we learn. And then I usually check the head on top of my neck, not too far forward, not too far back, not to the left, not to the right, just nicely balanced. And lastly, I look at the muscles around my eyes and my mouth, making sure they are relaxed and nothing is being pulled tight. Everything is loose. Using the simile of a rope, I'm letting go of both ends. Everything is nice and loose and free. And having completed this quick run through my body from my legs to my head. Just look at my body as a whole. It's in a pretty good position. And I've taken time on this. With my awareness just focused on my body. And now I go to this really interesting deeper level of relaxation, which is great for people with illnesses. While people who are healthy will get illness one day. This prevents it. So I look through my body, finding out one little part of my body which is aching or irritating or even in pain. If you have many such areas, choose the worst, the most irritating or most painful. Part which you cannot really get to, you know, by movement or by scratching. Once you're focused on that one area of your body which is irritating or painful, that is awareness, mindfulness. Just being aware of that one small part of your body. Now, see if you can notice that feeling change. Sometimes it gets worse, sometimes it gets better. And see if you could notice it is the attitude of your mind which can make that pain worse, tighter, more acute, or it can just soften it, even ease it away. You'll soon notice it's a simple kindness, letting it be, not telling it to get better, saying to it, ache, pain, whatever you want to do is okay with me. I care for you. The door of my heart's open to you. Ache, pain, irritation. And you'll find that type of attitude makes the ache, the pain, the irritation, the itch much less. I like to say it's like relaxing everything. So even a deep ache or pain inside of you, in your, say, intestines, or maybe in a liver or something, a deep pain inside, you can focus on, and you can actually relax. And the ache, the pain, gets less and less and less. Any tension within the body is like that rubber band being pulled tight. You loosen both ends. You stop squashing the sponge. You feel the body become more at ease. Aches and pains start to lessen. And energy can start to flow through your body rather than being blocked. Start to feel that single part of the body which you're focusing on really relax. Like someone was inside massaging it very softly. Massaging away all the tension, all the tightness, all the pain. And it expands, relaxes, becomes so at ease. With practice, amazing is what you can relax and how you can heal yourself. The body, which is no tension inside of it, very, very quickly heals. We're being kind and accepting, just letting this part of the body be, and it responds by being more comfortable. Just like when an angry person comes in the room, you get tense. When you look upon your body with fear, you get tense. When you look upon your body with kindness, you relax it. Stay with that one part of the body until it's really, really at ease. Now I like to do a couple of parts of my body. So when one part is pretty relaxed, I choose the second most irritating part. Focus on it. Be kind to it. And using kindfulness, it starts to relax. And it's not a problem. So feel my whole body just relaxing to the mat. Nothing being held tight. Everything loose. No squashed parts. Loose, free. And I know when my body is really relaxed, as it starts to feel what I call the pleasure of relaxation, a delightful feeling, similar to when you wake up in the morning having had a good sleep, cozy in bed, not wanting to get up because it feels too good. That sort of delight of a really relaxed, comfortable body.
Then once the body is so relaxed, and now I turn to the mind, especially the thing I call the peaceometer. How relaxed is your mind, or how agitated is it? How stressed? Be honest. That's noticing the peaceometer inside of you. Now what do you need to do to relax that mind? The simile of the guitar string, when it's tight, many thoughts come, many sounds come. When you loosen both ends, everything becomes calm and peaceful. One end of that guitar string, your mind, is being pulled by the past. The other one is being stretched into the future. That's what makes it tight. See if you can let go of all the past. You'll deal with it later. It's not important now. You deserve some peace. And all the anxieties and fears of the future, leave that till later. You don't need to worry in any way. Now, this moment is where your future is being made. Right here is the only time you ever have to make a future. This moment is important. So don't allow your mind to be pulled and stretched with worries of the future or with memories of the past. Let those two go and you find your guitar string, your mind, is nice and loose. And it makes no sound. Your peaceometer becoming more and more still. The needle moving more and more to peace. And feel peace. Understand not the word, but what it points to. What is peace? See how deep that peace can become. Not worrying about the past, not being dragged into the future. Letting go of both ends so your guitar string can be loose and free. It's like your body has got no stress, your mind, no stress, nothing pushing or pulling at it, not having to achieve something, that's stress, not having to get rid of something, that's stress, not needing to improve, you're good enough, that's lack of stress. It's being in this moment. The last part of the meditation to help. See if you can become aware of your breathing. Are you breathing in or are you breathing out right now? And how do you know? Whatever feeling it is, anywhere, you know you're breathing in. You know you breathe out. Just follow that feeling. Breathing in, breathing out. And to help, as you breathe in, thinking to yourself, breathing in peace. As you breathe out, think, breathe out, let go. Breathing in peace. Breathe out, let go. Breathing in peace. Breathe out, let go. Don't allow the mind to be pulled to the past or stretched into the future. You get taught again. Just relax in this moment with the breath happening now. As you breathe in peace, imagine peace coming into you. And don't just say the word. What does that word mean? Take that meaning, the meaning of peace, into your body, into your mind with every in-breath. Whatever is bothering you in your life, the sickness or a difficulty, let that go. Breathe that out with every out-breath. Breathing in peace, breathing out tumor. Or breathing in peace, breathing out tiredness. Whatever you want to let go of, breathe that out with every outbreath. And do it as carefully as you can, really paying attention in every moment. It's called mindfulness. Whatever you feel now, it's wonderful. Let it be. Don't try to improve or get rid of anything. Breathing in peace. Breathe out, let go. Wanting anything in the world, just content. Breathe in peace and breathe out, let go. Just content to be with this. No other duties. peace, breathing out, let go. And have another quick look at your peaceometer. How's it going? Are you becoming more peaceful? And then go back to your breathing. Watching the breath like the waves of the beach. Guitar strings or this disturbances like that don't create any echo. You're still peaceful. Getting close to the end of meditation now. Only a minute or so to go. How do you feel? How relaxed is your body and peaceful your mind? What worked and what didn't work? Is this where you can learn? By just spending a minute at the end of the meditation, just to recollect, understanding how it feels and why. now ring the gong 3 times. And when the gong finishes sounding for the 3rd time, that's a signal to come out for your meditation. Open your eyes and smile. I ask you to smile because I've got to face all of you. It's much nicer to open my eyes and seeing people smile.
You, but I needed it.
Now we have question time. Or are there any questions in the box today?
There are, but we don't know how old they are and whether the people put them in 4 weeks ago and they're still here.
Ah, doesn't matter, I mean ghost questions.
No, they've been there, it's just we didn't have a lot of questions when Venerable was here.
Okay. Well, do you want me to talk about something else?
Have you got the questions, David?
If you had multiple personalities,
yes,
would you be able to meditate?
Yes. Easy. I know this guy was with 2 personalities, and his goal in life was to be 2 with everything instead of be 1 with everything. That's a joke. There are multiple personalities. I think they just they will influence one another, because they all, if there's multiple personalities, they all use this brain. And if the brain is just really calm and peaceful, the body's calm and peaceful, then both personalities will also get that calm. Just like, there's this one thing which, you know, I've noticed, I know it works. One of the reasons why I meditate with you all is because when I get into a nice calm meditation, so do you. So I sort of drag you into calm. And so if there's this 2 people in the same body, in the same head, of course they would really influence one another. Mm. So one gets very peaceful, the other one would just get resonance, dragged into that peace as well. So of course you can meditate. Anyone can meditate. Never found any person who can't actually meditate. I know that sometimes psychologists say, well, some people be very careful. It's just the type of meditation you do. And it's got to be tailored. Even like children. Because that was a very difficult when I know how to meditate, but to get kids to meditate, you know, 6 or 7 years of age, that's very difficult. I was reminded of that today because one of the little kids I taught meditation 2 years ago saw her husband this afternoon at the Cancer Support Association and heard that this little girl I taught meditation to, that her son is now 21. So I feel really, really old. Teaching the mum and now the son is 21. Crikey. But anyway, you know what it's like. So it just reminds you that, you know, you're getting very ancient. But you had the task, this is over 30 years ago, teaching these little ones how to meditate. What I did is understand that, like, little kids, 7, 8 years of age, they can't really contemplate like something like the breath. What kids are really, really good at is visualizing and imagining. They can really get into that. So I remember as a kid, you know, imagine you're a tree, you know, in school, blowing in the wind. And you'd all sit up there with their hands up and just blow in the wind. And you really get into it. You can actually visualize it. You can feel it. Somehow or other, the kids had that power to really visualize and actually to imagine. So that's what I got the kids to do. I know that I got them to sit down, and what I did is just making up as I went along. It's like, imagine, like, you're in your body, nice and peaceful and relaxed. Now imagine, this was like in North Perth, we had our first little temple there. Now imagine, just floating up outside of your body, out over the roofs of North Perth, down towards the beach at Scarborough. Because, you know, kids love the beach. Over the sand, you can see all your friends, they're playing down there, but you're going way out over the beach, over the ocean, to your favourite place in the sea. You can imagine yourself just falling down really slowly into the ocean. It's really warm there. Not too hot, not too cold, and it's so peaceful there. And you look around, and there's no ships, no boats, no one as far as you can see. You feel the gentle breeze just wafting over your skin. And there's no mummy, no daddy, no brothers and sisters to annoy you. Just your special peaceful place in the middle of the ocean, just really warm. And maybe your friendly little fishes or dolphins come to say hello. But only they come to you because you're their friends. You see all your little friendly little fishes there. And you say hello to all of them. They're so calm and peaceful. And you're just floating there. No aches, no pains. Warm, relaxed. And I go on like this for a long time. They need to get into it. Were you getting into it?
Yeah.
and then at the very end, now's the time to come back and say bye-bye to all your fishes and friends. And you can imagine saying goodbye to your little special piece of ocean. Only you can go there, no one else. Floating up out of your body, out of the ocean. Floating up and see the beach in the distance. Floating closer and closer over the beach. Over the red rooftops and into this little temple rooftop, back into your body. Ah, relax, back again. Now you can open your eyes. And the little kids have really got into that. And every now and again you see them. Now one of those kids, Herb, now he was the only one ever to win the Iron Chef contest. Now he was on TV apparently, because I didn't know, but his sister told me that he won Iron Chef, and now he's got a little cafe over in Swan Valley somewhere. So he was actually the head chef of Scott's Cottage or something, won all his prizes. Brilliant guy. And I told him how to make, and apparently he still does that. You know, just sits down, imagine going to his special place in the ocean. Little things like that. So you teach kids, but you can't tell them to go and just look at a piezometer or feel the body or anything which is, you know, too sort of complicated. Simple as possible. So you can do it to all sorts of people. Depends on who they are and where you're starting from. But you can see the general idea. Just, you know, get out of your thinking. Use something to suppress or just supplant the thinking. Something a bit more interesting and useful and enjoyable. And then after a while you realise you haven't thought so much. We only think because you've got nothing better to do.
Mm.
And usually, as I'm editing another book, usually we get interesting thoughts first of all, really important ones. We can't find an interesting, important thought to think about, then we use anything, any rubbish. It's just like when you go watching a TV, look at interesting programs, there's nothing interesting on the TV, anything, any rubbish, just to escape. And that's what, like, our thoughts. Interesting ones, important ones first, but then, well, that's not important, anything will do. So it's thinking the most crazy, ridiculous things. But this is just to give a substitute to that, so it's something which is interesting and beautiful. And so there's so many different things we can do. But again, mostly like feelings or imaginations to get us into beautiful states of mind. A little peaceful space of mind. So that's sometimes we do. Sometimes, you know, that there was this guy, and he told me that he tried to do the breath meditation because he could never watch his breath. He never told me who this teacher was, but I think this must have been a great meditation teacher. He said, okay, you find difficulty watching your breath. He said, just sit down, close your eyes. Now, imagine you're watching your breath. Just imagine it. Imagine what it must be like to watch the breath go in and watch the breath go out. So just do that for a couple of minutes. Just imagine you're watching the breath. And after a couple of minutes, he was interrupted. He said, "What are you watching?" He said, "My breath." It was just a trick. The psychology thought he could not do this. So, if you want to learn how to meditate, just close your eyes, just imagine you're peaceful. Imagine what it must be like to be peaceful. Imagine what it must be like to be having no past, no future, nothing to do in the whole world. Having just this wonderful time which is free. Imagine you're in this monastery or this resort somewhere up in the Himalaya mountains, but not cold like the real Himalayas. Himalaya mountains with a nice big heater and a nice big blanket. Cool and peaceful and nice, just having a wonderful, the best meal of your life, and now you're just sitting down, just relaxing. Imagine what it must be like. Not a worry in the world, you've got plenty of money when you come back to Australia, you don't have to go to work ever again. Imagine what it must be like. Your body, all the aches and pains and the illnesses, all being cured, fit and healthy. Imagine what it must be like. Imagine that. And after a while you're back there. Wow, this is really good. You get peaceful. So sometimes using a bit of imagination actually works. And even if you imagine that you're healthy, you actually get more healthy. Never ever underestimate the power of the human mind. I said this story this afternoon again. Very common story. It was about this hypnotism, because in hypnotism that you use the power of the mind to do some really interesting stuff. So they got this 4-inch nail on the end of a piece of wood, and they hypnotized this guy to believe that was red hot. I mean, really, really red hot. And they touched him on the skin on his arm. Ow! He screamed in pain. Because under hypnosis he believed it was red hot, and that's what you're supposed to do. They expected that boy, they never expected to see, was a blister come up. As if it really was red hot. And it was at room temperature. You know, his mind had created that blister. And you know, there's been other really, really amazing experiments. One of the ones I remember reading, you know, as a student, they're interested in all sorts of things. This was on psychology. That they, a very bad experiment, this was done in, I think, was it 1899, in Bristol Jail in England. The poor fellow was condemned to death. And a couple of scientists got permission to do this very macabre experiment. He was going to die anyway. They went to his cell the night before he was supposed to be hung. And these scientists, posing as members of the government or whatever, said that the law had been changed. He would still be executed, but not by hanging. He would have his throat cut the following morning. And let this poor gentleman sleep on that. The following morning, they came to him, they gave him his last rites or whatever, the priest, anything to say. They blindfolded him, tied his hands behind his back, and led him to the place of execution. He was blindfolded, he didn't know it was just the prison washrooms. And there, one of the scientists, you know, reading out the sentence, that did all of the ceremonies which you're supposed to do, and then took a blunt razor. You remember those old-fashioned cutthroat razors? Now the other end of it, which was blunt, and drew it across his throat. Never even scratched his skin. It was blunt. But he felt cold steel across his throat. And another of the experimenters turned on one of the taps in the washroom. And this fellow felt cold steel, heard liquid rushing out, and you know, he thought he died. He had his throat cut. So he actually fell to the floor and actually did die. And there was nothing wrong with him. He'd been thinking about that all night. He'd been convinced he was going to die of having his throat cut. He didn't see anything, he just felt cold steel and liquid coming out. And they died. It's a very macabre but experiment which was done over 100 years ago. The power of your mind. So if you think you're going to die, you do. If you think you're going to live and get better, you do. One of, again, other experiences, I've been around a long time in this area. There was an oncologist I knew in Malaysia, Chinese Buddhist, and we were chatting together. She was about to retire. She said she'd been an oncologist for so many years. She said, now I don't need to look at the reports or the biopsies or the scans to know if a person's going to survive or not. I just look at them. I can tell after 2 or 3 minutes when they walk into the room whether they're going to survive or not. Nothing to do with how advanced their cancer is. Everything to do with their attitude. That's what she told me, and that was from someone who'd been in that area for such a long time. Attitude, that's what makes the difference. And I don't know if I told you this last time, but the lovely bit of philosophy from Snoopy. This is the difference between negativity and positivity. Charlie Brown, Snoopy's, the dog's master, said, one day we must all die. You can't argue with that, can you? But that's really negative. So Snoopy says, yes, but most days we don't die. Well, that's actually such an obvious one, but it so changes the whole idea. One day we will die, of course, but most days we don't die. That's pretty true as well. So that's the difference between negativity and positive mind. And that's the difference between, for some people, living and dying. Recovery and just going under. Just your mind, that's all. Attitudes. So that's why you just look at your body and you're kind to it, and your body heals. You look at your life with a positive attitude. So things go wrong in life. Welcome to life. So what do? When things go wrong in life, what do I call it, Rachel? Treading in the... Are you going to say? Oh, come on! This is Australia! Treading in the dog shit. So when you tread in the dog shit, what do?
Put it on your roses.
Yeah, not right. I prefer mangoes. Yeah. Because I have allergies. Roses, flowers. That's one of the worst things, because I get hay fever. And people are always offering flowers to monks. Killing me. Mangoes, much better, yeah. So if you... Any dog shit, put on your mango tree, take it home. Don't think this is something awful that's happened to me. I've trodden in the dog poo. Take it home. Dig it out of the mango tree. And then, 1 year later, your mangoes are so sweet and juicy. Better than ever before. And when you bite into that mango, it's the trouble with people, they just forget where it came from. When you bite into that mango, remember that what you're really eating is dog shit. It's transformed into beautiful mango. When you have happiness in life, where does it come from? It's all the dog shit of what you've been through, the hardship, the learning, where you've learned what real kindness is. How can you really learn what kindness is if you haven't suffered? How can you know what generosity is if you haven't actually been poor? You really have been hungry. Then you know why you should be generous and kind. When someone has really ill-treated you and accused you of things you've never done, that's where you learn forgiveness. So all the difficult things in life, after a while we learn that these are where the most beautiful qualities of a human being come from. And Nelson Mandela, 26 years of his life, the best years of his life, put in jail. And what did he learn? Forgiveness. It's beautiful. So people like that, all the difficulties in your life, people who've been really, really sick, half the people who are serving at the Cancer Wellness Association in Cottesloe. They've all been through the mill, radiation therapy, chemotherapy, surgery, and that teaches them to be kind, because they've hurt. So some of these things which happen to us, you can actually get negative from them and say, why me? The answer to that question, why me, is why not? And then it's a, not, you know, honestly, after a while, you never look at it. When you look back upon it, at the time you think, this is disgusting, terrible, why me? But afterwards, people always say thank you. You know, one thing, 27 years I've been going to that group at Cottesloe. And what I learned there was something which was really shocking at first. But all these people who've been through cancer, not just one, hundreds of them came up to me and said, that was the best thing which ever happened to me. That's what they said. I didn't say that. That's what they said. I have no right to say that. Only they do. And they said they grew and they learned so much. That's what life is for learning. And life is not always going to be easy and fun. We always can learn something out of it. That's why I say even dog shit, smelliest, disgusting thing, is some of the best fertilizer. Some of the pain we go through, terrible at the time, you wouldn't wish it on anybody, but once you're through it, you grow so much. It has got meaning. It has got, it's an opportunity. So you can take it and grow something good. Or instead you just put it in your pockets. And if you carry around dog shit, you find you lose a lot of friends. Smell, yeah, you stink. So that's not what you're supposed to do with this stuff. Dig it in. And it grows and it becomes wonderful. And that's what you can do to other people, often say. You're someone who can actually hold a person's hand and say, I know what you feel. I know you're being honest. You really do know. You've been there. But the most important thing is not just empathy, I know how you feel. It's the second thing, I know the way out. Come with me. I can lead you if you want to come. And that's a great gift. That's, you know, being a human being, helping and serving others. That's one of my friends, that's Ajahn Gunha, the one who packs King Cobras. That's what we always said, that's the point of life, is to serve. But you may have to grow something yourself to give others. You've got to grow your own garden before you can give out your carrots to other people. But once you've grown your garden, there's always more than enough food for yourself. That's why when people do have little gardens or trees in the backyard, what happens when you get so many mangoes or apples? You give it to all. You pass them around, yeah. And that gives you much more fun than eating them yourself. But nevertheless, you enjoy it yourself. And all because of the hard work, struggle of your life. You've grown something and you share it. And that's one of the most beautiful things you can ever do. Meaning of life. So obvious. So, any other comments or questions? Yeah,
let's see if there's any questions on meditation, because the last 4 weeks we didn't really get to ask any. So
okay, questions on meditation.
Are there any?
Yeah.
That's great.
Shut everybody
up.
Yeah, okay.
No, we haven't got
time. I'll go over 5 minutes.
Could you please? Is there really nothing on meditation? Okay. Anyone wants to know about meditation? Newcomers?
You just remember, meditation is pretty much natural, default. This is quick one, this is, but sometimes it's deep, but it's actually, everyone understands it. My teacher Ajahn Chah, he would wave his hand like that. This is a leaf on a tree. It only moves because of the wind. If the wind stopped moving, it would move less and less and less until it would become perfectly still. That's its natural state, to be still. A leaf on a tree. Just like your mind, if you stop wanting stuff, maybe meditation, wanting to be peaceful, wanting to get rid of the problems, wanting to be healthy, wanting whatever it is, then your mind becomes perfectly still and content. So easy to do once you see what's going on. But our problem is that many people start meditation, they want to improve themselves. Well, you're beautiful as you are, you're good enough. That's the old thing with the tree in the forest. Find the difference between a perfect tree and a beautiful tree. Perfect trees aren't beautiful. Bent, crooked, damaged trees, they are beautiful. You go and find one, your favourite tree in the forest is bent and crooked all over the place, and so much damage on its trunk. They're gorgeous trees. So don't try and improve yourself, don't try and straighten yourself out. You're beautiful as you are, all crooked and bent and stupid and gnarled and things falling off. Those are my favourite trees, natural ones. So once you understand that, you understand what do you want to change yourself for? Who says you should change? So meditation is loving yourself for who you are, not trying to change one bit, not changing you, changing your attitude, being at peace, not wanting to be different, not wanting to improve. And then you're at peace with yourself. You know what happens then? Then you really do improve. When you want to improve, you get worse. When you leave it all alone, you get better. So that's meditation in a nutshell.